5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The dark side of the Huddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. On today's episode, we talk to Ruben Yap, project steward at Zcoin. We get into his background and his history and how he actually heard about crypto through his customers after he was ceremoniously unbanked. We also talk about how he got involved with Zcoin and why he's very passionate about online and financial privacy and why he hates projects that claim to be private that aren't. Of course, we get to a technical dive in Zcoin, and he compares Zcoin's tech and burn and redeem privacy with some of the other popular crypto privacy protocols and why he thinks Zcoin is superior. We also talk about how Zcoin was recently used to vote in some Thai elections and the upcoming roadmap for Zcoin. I found this a very fascinating discussion, and Ruben Yap has a lot of technical knowledge, so you're not going to want to miss this one on the dark side of the Huddle Moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantex. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Dark Side of the Huddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iThesound.com. All right, and we're back with another episode of Dark Side of the Huddle Moon. I'm Blockade here with Josh. Josh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well today. Thanks, Cade. I hope you're doing well in America. How's it going?
I'm doing really well. And, you know, we're both really big fans of crypto and crypto as currency. And we've got a pretty big guest on today from one of the bigger projects. So let's introduce him. Without any further ado, welcome to the show, Ruben from Zcoin.
Hi. Thanks, Josh and Cade, for having me on. And I love the name of the podcast.
Thanks.
Yeah, we wanted to do something a little flashy, a little bit more interesting. And Zcoin is one of the bigger cryptocurrencies when it comes to privacy. But before we get into that, I want to learn a little bit more about our guest. So, Ruben, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Maybe where you grew up, what you studied, you know, your hobbies when you were younger, and just kind of go where you want to with it.
Sure. So, I'm Ruben Yap. I grew up in Kuching. It's a really small city in Borneo, which is actually part of Malaysia. We're famous for our monkeys. We're famous for our headhunters, the ones that cut people's heads off. Deforestation as well. As professionally, I was a lawyer for 10 years prior to joining crypto. I was actually a partner at a law firm. I did a lot of work for the state government, helping them to kind of set up their laws around what they call institutional frameworks. So that's my background. But I've also started a VPN company, which was quite successful back in 2007, called Bully VPN. That's kind of how I got into privacy. And that's also how I got into Bitcoin, when people were saying like, hey, you know, you're a privacy service. Why do I need to use PayPal? Why do I need to use all this stuff that has all my identity? Why didn't you accept stuff like Bitcoin? And that's how I just went down the rabbit hole in about 2012, 2013. As for hobbies, I actually run and teach at an Aikido dojo. So I'm a fourth degree black belt in Aikido. I'm also a licensed trainer in something called Crazy Monkey Defense, which is like a street MMA self-defense. And I fought in a cage. So that was an interesting experience. I played chess and a lot of geeky stuff, except punching.
Nice. It sounds like you're a well-trained fighter. Have you ever been in any street fights on the rough streets there in Malaysia?
Well, the Malaysia is on the rough streets. I got into a lot of altercations in UK when I was studying over there. There was some like racism or people picked on me. I also got picked on I was held up at knife point in Kuala Lumpur when I was coming back from a cyber cafe very late at night. So that was a very interesting experience. And you think that you're prepared and all that sort of stuff, but it's not as pretty as in the dojo. It's very chaotic. I was screaming like a little girl, even though I was like flipping the guy. And that was a really interesting experience. I wouldn't like to relive it again, but yeah. It kind of made me aware of this traditional stuff is fine and dandy, but it's not going to work on the street unless you really pressure test it.
Definitely. And yeah, when someone brings a knife to a fight, it totally changes the dynamic. Well, let's move on to a different subject here. So I did know that you did some VPN work, and that's maybe another reason I know that you're passionate about privacy. It's in your LinkedIn bio, and when it comes to the VPN, and obviously Zcoin is privacy focused. So can you talk a little bit about your work with the VPN and just in general, why you value privacy?
Honestly, I mean, when I started the VPN company, it wasn't so much about individual liberty or privacy. It was actually because my government started censoring P2P and I couldn't get my anime fix. So that's the honest answer. But what actually happened was, as kind of expected, kind of innocuous type of censorships, which was justified intellectual property or protecting people against pornography and stuff like that. It always starts with good intentions. And then after that, it gets more and more. Because after the P2P, after the pornography, then after that, it started censoring stuff like political speech, stuff that was critical against the government. And even stuff like Medium.com was completely censored in my country, because there was a couple of blogs that were critical of our government. And that's kind of how how I really got into privacy. And as well, for example, another thing that really kind of irked me was, as a VPN business, all I'm doing is encrypting people's internet connections, right? And I had a lot of the payment providers that were the credit card, the companies that helped me accept payment processes started cutting me off and saying that, VPNs are like a high-risk business. You're in the same category as adult videos and stuff like that, which to me is like, why is it high risk? Even adult videos, they're like, why is it high risk, right?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So when that started happening, and first of all, the fees were not cheap as well. PayPal charges like 3.4% and then additional fixed amount on top of that. So, when your ticket sizes are not very big, it's like, $370 or $4, that adds up to a huge chunk of fees just for processing a transaction. And yeah, so I guess that combined with, privacy in general, and then also about you felt that the money wasn't really yours, even though you weren't doing anything wrong. That kind of like led me down the privacy rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's interesting because, we've heard about, or at least I've heard about the censorship in China and people being banned from banks, whether it's WikiLeaks or other controversial figures, which aren't that controversial. But I didn't know it was such an issue in Malaysia with censorship and maybe banks not willing to process you. So is that kind of how you found crypto? Did you just stumble upon it, or did you search for it after you were having these issues with the banks?
Actually, several customers approached me and saying that, hey, why don't you take a look into this? And back then, you know, like we don't have a lot of exchanges back then. It was still, especially like regional exchanges. And I had to find someone in Singapore to actually convert it back into Malaysian ringgit. It's kind of wow. And unfortunately, you know, back then I was just like focused on the business. I was like, okay, what's this funny internet money called Bitcoin, right? And as long as I can convert it to ringgit, I'm fine. And I should not be speculating on this. I just need to convert and making sure that I lock in my profits. Well, I should have not done that. But, you know, I think that was like, you know, I guess the beginning.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And obviously, yeah, that's what a lot of companies that accept crypto payments do now as well, is they convert it directly back to their native fiat currency. So let's kind of expand a little bit more on that privacy. So it came to the VPN, it came to the privacy of payments. Having that privacy when it comes to a VPN, why do you think privacy is important when it comes to crypto? So we have a lot of different feelings about it. Like, oh, if it's private, it's only being used by criminals. There's some other privacy coins like Monero or Beam or other ones that use coin mixing. There's different technologies. And obviously, Zcoin uses privacy. So in general, why do you think privacy is important when it comes to crypto?
Well, I actually think, like, you know, if you take a look at what Bitcoin is supposed to be, you know, we always talk about uncensorable money. I mean, this is like a phrase, right? But you can't have uncensorability if you don't have privacy. I mean, that's the simple fact. And the fact that it hasn't really happened yet doesn't mean it can't be done, especially when you have stuff like the FATF travel rule coming into play, right? Or like, you know, all these exchanges now mandating the use of blockchain analysis companies. So if you believe in the idea of uncensorable money, that money should not have morals, you know, people are talking about, oh yeah, you know, like this can be used for bad stuff. Well, the internet can be used for bad stuff. Cash and fiat is used for bad stuff. I mean, there's the utility itself does not have money. You know, we might as well blame electricity for enabling all of this, right? So I do see privacy as an essential tool, but the way I see privacy is, I mean, yes, first of all, we talk on the individual level, right? We don't want people reading our thoughts, right? So it's a basic human right, and it's how we govern ourselves, what we present to the outside world and what we keep inside. It's not necessarily that we're doing something illegal. But on the bigger scale, like you're talking about the relationship between the citizen and the government and law enforcement and stuff like that, there has to be a balance that, yes, you know, law enforcement and government still has to work and be able to catch the bad guys. But at the same time, it cannot be at the cost of liberty of everybody, because what that means, that turns your government, instead of representing you, it becomes they have... It's even worse than a monarchy, because now they know everything about you. And just imagine if you don't have financial privacy, if you don't have, like, you know, ownership of your finances, or everything about you is accessible to the government. You cannot rise against a government like that. Because, you know, like in the US, you talk about the right to bear arms, you know, so that if anything, like, you know, the government comes tyrannical, the citizens can rise up. Well, if you don't have privacy, you can't even do that, even if you have a gun. So that's kind of how I feel about privacy. But I don't think it's more a check and balance, because by having privacy, you limit power. And when you have limitations of powers, it becomes a check and balance. Without it, you have total absolute power, and, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, crypto money, fiat money, they're all value neutral. You know, they can be used for good or bad. Another easy example, a knife can be used to cut up some meat and veggies and make a stir fry, or it can be used to hold you up at knife point, like you sadly experienced. And I kind of want to talk a little bit more about, you mentioned in your last comment, what do you think about, I tend to agree with you on your thoughts about privacy, but what do you make of certain governments wanting to ban crypto, or like you said, more KYC and AML regulations, with exchanges and governments cracking down on it. What do you make of the rules in Southeast Asia or in the US or all over the world? And what do you think people can do about it?
I mean, this is a bit controversial, as you know, because I'm like part of a privacy coin, but I'm not against regulation, especially if it's measured. Like, you know, people talk about, oh, the regulation of exchanges and stuff like that. Oh, but they need AML KYC. Doesn't that defeat the purpose of having a privacy coin? But if you accept that cryptocurrency is money, it makes sense that it is subject to the same rules as money, right? Or it's fiat, right? And if fiat already has like AML KYC rules, like, you know, for any sort of regulated exchanges, then there should be that as well for cryptocurrencies. And it, to me, it's a good thing. I mean, yes, it's a sacrifice on certain elements of privacy, but at the same time, it also makes it recognized. You cannot argue that privacy coins or cryptocurrency is used for nefarious purpose if it's going to be subject to the same rules as regular fiat money. So in that vein, I'm kind of, you know, for regulated exchanges. I mean, we've seen so many crappy exchanges, like, you know, like even the well-intentioned ones, like you see, look at the DeFi ones, like BZX, you know, there's so much like hacks, there's no like safeguards and stuff like that. So I do think there's a role for centralized regulated exchanges still. Not to say that I'm against DEXs, I'm very big for DEXs and DeFi, but there is a role for regulated exchanges to play. Now, in terms of like countries just banning cryptocurrencies completely, that has more about you know, protecting their money sovereignty. Is about protecting the government's power rather than anything else. Even the whole move towards like a cashless society, that's similarly, you know, it's always phrased in the sense of combating crime when it's actually about consolidating power, because with a totally digital money, you can't hide at all. And that's why in this scenario, people are just like giving up. Like in China, people have just given it up. Like you try to use cash on the streets of China, people are like, oh, give me WeChat Pay. You know, like, why aren't you using WeChat Pay? And that to me is dangerous. People don't realize that, like, even here in Malaysia, there's now like limits of how much you can pay in cash. You can't pay anything more than 25,000 ringgit, which is like divided by four, you know, kind of like 4,000. Like 5,000 US dollars or so. So that's, people say, oh yeah, it's to combat crime, but actually it's more about the government wants to see all these flows. And yeah,
it's very Orwellian. And yeah, in the US and Germany, people still use cash a fair amount. But yeah, in some places, yeah, if everything's in your bank account, they know every single movement you're doing. And even if you're not doing anything bad, like, do you really want to know the government to know how much beer you're buying, or you want the government to know every single thing, every single movement you make? I think it's a little scary myself.
But not even from the government level. I mean, yes, we've been talking about the government level, but let's say, like, you know, if I do believe in like Bitcoin or like, you know, other kind of cryptocurrencies that are used for like merchant transactions, right? If I have 100 Bitcoin in one address and I want to buy a cup of coffee and I send from that address 0.001 or so, immediately the coffee person knows that I have 100 Bitcoin at least. Why should I be giving up that information, right? And similarly, you know, I can look at the address and maybe think, okay, you know, he receives his salary roughly monthly from this particular and of that amount. Or I know who he's buying from. I know the suppliers, how much he's paying, you know, the rent. And those are things that should be private. So it's not just about protecting ourselves from the government, but protecting from everyone else. Remember, blockchain is public and permanent. And I think, you know, that's people who say privacy doesn't matter is total bullshit. Yeah,
I agree. I always say that about Bitcoin. It's a public ledger, fellas, and that means that you can basically trace everything. So I think that was part of the inspiration behind building something like Zcoin, to make everything anonymous, private. You control your money, you control what you do, and you control what people can see or can't see. So I think this would be a great point to transition into the founding of Zcoin. How did Zcoin come about? I know that it's a really popular privacy coin, and it's managed to get on some of the biggest exchanges in the world, including Binance, which we will ask you about later. So let's go back to the early days of Zcoin. How did it all start? And that would be a really interesting story for our listeners.
Sure. So our founder is Paramount Imsom. He's a Thai guy, and you know, his parents were from very humble beginnings. I think they were teachers, and basically he went to the US to study at Johns Hopkins University, and Johns Hopkins was where Matthew Green of Zcash fame was actually teaching there. So he came across the Zero Coin paper. It was different than the Zero Cash paper, but back in 2014 or so, the Zero Coin paper kind of came up, and he was like really fascinated by it. Now, Paramin before this had actually founded another cryptocurrency called Vertcoin, and that coin was the first coin that had like stealth addressing, and you know, it also had this anti-ASIC kind of ethos, right? But then when he saw Zcoin, he was like, wow, this is much better privacy. You know, stealth addresses don't really provide like meaningful privacy against a more dedicated adversary. But he said, wow, Zcoin is like this concept of being able to take your coins and destroy them and then redeem them for brand new ones with no transaction history was really, really brilliant. So he actually wrote his master's paper about how a practical implementation of Zcoin kind of would look like. And on the basis of that paper, he actually started another project called Zcoin, which was supposed to be a merge mine coin or Vertcoin that supported Zcoin. But the community, you know, said that, oh, you know, this stuff is kind of experimental. You know, why are we looking at this? And he didn't really get the support that he wanted. And he also needed funding so that he could do it full time. So with another co-founder, his name was Gary Le, which he has been pushed out of the project, but we can talk about that later. but basically, Paramin was like the coder guy, you know, he's kind of a private person, and Gary came in and was like, okay, you know, I can help you find investors, I can do everything else, you just focus on the coding and stuff like that. So Gary approached Roger Ver and several other like angel investors who gave us not a lot of money, maybe altogether about $100,000 to $200,000 or so, just to get this project out, out of the door. And in 2016, it launched, and that's kind of how it all began. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So, yeah, it's a little confusing with Zcoin and Zcash. They have, mm-hmm. like, the same author and founder, but I guess, would you say Zcoin is kind of an improved version of Zcash because of the technology? Or
Originally, we use an earlier protocol. So Zcoin and Zcash are actually totally different protocols. So I think Zcoin is the cryptocurrency, Zcash is the cryptocurrency, Zcoin was the protocol we started with, and Zcash is the protocol Zcash started with. And I wouldn't say Zcoin is an improvement over Zcash. Zcash was supposed to be the improvement to Zcoin, but it retained certain things. To achieve the performance of Zcash, they took certain, they sacrificed certain things to achieve that, namely a very complicated trusted setup using experimental cryptography. And you know, it's like a whole lot more complex, and it also kind of lost what we call supply auditability because with those Z to Z transactions as well. So back then, you know, when we were using Zcoin, like, hey, this technology still can be taken further. It has good roots, and in a way, we have moved from Zcoin to something called Sigma, and now from Sigma, we have something called Lelantis, which actually just builds on. But I guess we can talk about that later.
Yeah, nice. I want to talk about that a little later. I didn't know that Roger Ver was an early investor. I know he's invested in a lot of projects, but yeah. He was an investor in this project when it first started.
Yes, he's one of the like founding investors. I mean, he's invested in almost everything, right? He's founding investor of Zcash as well, and many other projects. Yeah. Back before he was controversial, like everyone liked him then.
Yeah. Well, the Bitcoin hard forks have made a lot of people that used to get along not get along anymore.
Yeah,
but let's get back into Zcoin. There's a lot of different things I want to talk about, but I kind of want to talk about the burn and redeem privacy setup. Mm-hmm. And also it mentions like the trusted setup has drawbacks. So how does burn and redeem privacy work, and what are its benefits?
Right. So, well, first of all, the burn and redeem mechanism, like compared to stuff like I guess the way that I always describe it, which is kind of crude, but it's very easy to visualize, is with mixing solutions, like, okay, let's say, you know, I enter an elevator or a lift. I don't know which one the Americans call it, but, you know, and I let out a fart, I pass wind. And if I'm the only one in the lift, you know it's me, right? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is Bitcoin, right? You do the transaction, I know it's you, because there's only one possible source. With how Monero works is, or like coin joins and all this sort of stuff, or actually the way Monero works is I kind of drag 10 other people into the lift, and then I let out a fart, and I'm like, it could be one of these 11 people here. Which one is it, right? So you're kind of hiding in the crowd. Similarly, with CoinJoin or stuff like Mimblewimble, it's about getting everyone that wants to fart at the same time. We just cram them in the lift and we all let out the fart at the same time. So like, whose fart is whose, right? So it's all that plausible deniability. While the way Zcoin and Zcash works is kind of different. It's like, go into the lift and I let out a fart. I don't have to drag anyone into it. But I can choose any time in the future for that fart to reappear. The lift, you know, could be empty. There could be other people in it. And you just, instead of just the people in the lift, your anonymity set or plausible deniabilities with anyone who ever entered that lift. And that's why we believe that, you know, this is a much better way to do privacy, because the anonymity set is much greater. You're not just limited to the people that you are in with the lift. So that's the kind of approach that we're looking at. And now, you know, like, for example, like with Z to Z transactions, or for us, what we call direct anonymous payments, what we can do is that instead of just farting and choosing when it should reappear, I can pass the right to fart to make that fart appear to someone else. So I don't even though I'm the one who farted, I could say I'm never going to let it out. I'm just going to give this right to someone else. And can you imagine that privacy is a lot greater there.
So great analogy. Entertaining analogy as well, but it makes sense entirely. So it's
yeah,
good.
It's easy to visualize or smell. But so I guess, like, let's talk about trusted setup, right? And what trusted setup is. Trusted setup is something like when you first generate the system, you have to create certain initial parameters and then destroy them. If you have somehow retained those initial parameters, you effectively have a backdoor into the system to print coins at will. So that's a big thing. And one of the analogies that I like to use is kind of like Lord of the Rings. You know, you have all those rings and then you have the One Ring. And the One Ring is effectively a backdoor that can control everyone else. And you have to you have to destroy that One Ring or else, you know, bad shit happens. So in Zcash, you know, they use a trusted setup where the initial ceremony had 6 people and, you know, they went to different parts of it and they have to have destroyed them. And as long, if the ceremony was done correctly and there were no other attack vectors, as long as one person destroyed it correctly, then the secret cannot be reassembled again. You know, it's almost like you're breaking the One Ring into pieces, and as long as one of the pieces is like completely lost, you can't reassemble that ring back again. The problem with that was, I mean, this gets a bit technical, but you know, there were other ways to compromise so that even if everyone thought they were doing the right thing, if I had compromised the binary that they were running, you know, it's still an element of trust. You had to have trust that it was destroyed correctly and there were no other backdoors in it. And actually, that initial ceremony wasn't secure at all, which, you know, kind of led them to redo the ceremony again. Zcoin used a zero coin, which had a really interesting way to kind of bypass this requirement for a ceremony. Because back in 1991, RSA actually had an academic challenge to actually say, let's test out how good RSA encryption is. And they had an academic challenge, they destroyed the stuff, and there was a $200,000 bounty to break it. So of course they took some steps to destroy it, but of course no one then had any inkling that these parameters would be used in a cryptocurrency, right? It was just an academic challenge, and if they had somehow kept the secret, it would have defeated the purpose of the academic challenge. Oh, my computer just... Okay, all right. So there it was a third party doing it. There was no, like, you know, I guess the intent is different. And it's a lot less controversial because, you know, first of all, we didn't do it. We couldn't have backdoored it. And the chance of that being backdoored just didn't make sense. While with Zcash, you knew that ceremony is going to create a cryptocurrency. But the good news is that, you know, the burn and redeem mechanism that we use with Sigma, which is something called one out of many proofs, does not require a trusted setup. So we've done away with the trusted setup completely. And similarly, the lanterns and all our future developments do not have this trusted setup element. So, yeah.
Nice. It's interesting. And I really like the burn and redeem privacy. I think a lot of privacy projects, they all say they're the most private or the most secure. Do you think that projects like Grin and Beam, they're not private now, or do you just think they have the potential to be not private in the future through like an advanced chain analysis?
It's not just about chain analysis. So like, I think if you took a look at that post by Ivan, I mean, it was kind of unfortunate. I mean, like, the people who worked on Grin knew about this vulnerability, right? And they were, Grin has always been promoted as a privacy coin. I mean, that is undeniable, right? People say Grin privacy, right? But then when that whole attack vector came up, and the way I kind of described that attack vector was, it's almost like back to the elevator example. That, yes, although I'm dragging everyone into the room and we're all farting together, but I have this heat camera there that can see, you know, the fart exiting the bum. So I know exactly whose fart belongs to who. And that is something that's going to be quite difficult for Grin or Mimblewimble-based coins to get around. It's just almost unavoidable unless they come up with something drastically different. And I think it offers good casual privacy, you know, to the public, you know. I mean, unlike Bitcoin, where the public has full access to the information, with Mimblewimble coins, you know, unless you're like really determined to break it, then yes, you know, someone who wants to lock all the IP addresses and transactions, that takes a lot more effort. So I do think it offers good casual privacy. Beam does certain additional things like introducing decoys. So what they do is that instead of just, you know, finding everyone that wants the fart, they also bring in some innocent people as well. So it does have some additional privacy. But they too realize that Mimblewimble alone isn't good enough. And that's why they are going to be implementing our technology called Lelantis sometime this year. So they realize that, you know, the burn and redeem mechanism is I guess superior.
Nice, that's interesting, and I like to get your technical perspective on that. Can you talk a little bit about mining when it comes to Zcoin? I noticed that you have masternodes and you also do proof of work, but I believe it's ASIC resistant. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, yes, that's what we call it as a simplification. Whether there's something that's truly like ASIC proof, no, you know, but I guess ASIC resistant is a good way to describe it. And so I think most of the block reward, I think more 58% or something like that goes to mining, 30% goes to the masternodes, 8% goes to the founding investors, which is ending in September, and 6% goes to the development team. So hopefully that will change with the next block halving as well. Now, we really believe that as a privacy coin, you know, especially very early in the issuance of supply, and it's important to kind of get it as distributed as you can get, because, well, proof of stake coins don't do anything for distribution, right? It's basically the same people, the rich getting richer, and proof of work is one way to say to kind of change the distribution mechanism so not just the existing people can get it. But the problem with many proof of work coins, like for example with Bitcoin or even in coins like Zcash, where they have already been ASIC dominated, it becomes such that all the new coins go to the people who have the ASICs. And who are the people who have the most ASICs are the manufacturers. Now, you try to buy a Zcash ASIC today, you can't. It's all out of stock. And who are the people who are producing them? They're probably still producing it for themselves, because remember all these mining machine manufacturers, they are effectively selling you money-making machines. I mean, this is a crude way to put it, but they're making money-printing machines. Why should they sell you a money-printing machine when they could just use it to print themselves? Only when they are initially growing, when they are like not so big, they don't have a lot of capital, they're like, okay, I need to get other customers to meet my minimum silicon so I can order from TSMC or whatever the chip provider, because I need to make that minimum quantity order. Or I need to have cash flow so that I can scale my operations. But once you've reached like Bitmain size, you don't need any of that. Then you're like, I'm not going to sell this. I'm just going to take it and mine it for myself. So is it right that a coin should have only one or two manufacturers just dominating all the hash rate? Then what's the point of proof of work? You don't, yeah, how is it better, right? It's not so much to me. It's the beauty of proof of work is not security assumptions. It's more about distribution in a fair way. And, you know, although Satoshi did talk about one CPU, one vote, I think that was back in when, you know, maybe botnets weren't as prevalent, where cloud computing wasn't as prevalent, because Zcoin actually started as a CPU mineable coin, because we thought that that seemed the most fair. Everyone has a CPU. With a GPU, it's like, you know, it's not everyone has a GPU, but everyone definitely has a CPU. But the problem with that is that when we launched with a CPU mineable coin, we realized that our hash rate was being dominated, like absolutely dominated by a very few players. You're talking about 3 or 4 players, because they had access to large server farms with either hash rate or like huge botnets that they could just turn on and be mining our coin. And we could compete with that. Or even with cloud computing, like they went to AWS and somehow they had a source of cheap credits, like through stolen credit cards or like, you know, those free gift AWS vouchers. And they were just using it to mine us at almost no cost. And because they were getting it so cheap, they were like, oh yeah, I might as well dump it and lock my profits in, right? I might as well do that. So that was very disastrous for us in the early, and that's why we moved towards GPU, which, you know, it's a lot more resistant against botnets. It's a lot more resistant against, you know, you don't have like large GPU server farms just waiting either. They're generally doing something. So yes, GPUs are kind of like a compromise, and that's why we move towards MTP. And we feel that still GPU mining is the most equitable way, not the perfect way, but among the kind of things that we can choose from. But yeah.
Yeah, well, it's good that you're able to adapt. Yeah, there's no perfect solution, I think, right now when it comes to mining. And you mentioned that after the halving, which is coming up soon, then all the rewards go to the miners in the node. So that's nice. You're not giving, the team isn't getting rewards forever. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of distribute it more like you mentioned a little bit.
There is currently a proposal to extend the development reward. That means not the founder's reward. That means just to go towards development for additional maybe 1 or 2 years as we figure out the best way to do governance. I mean, we actually recently launched a Zcoin crowdfunding system in a way to decentralize funding sources. So I don't know if we're totally ready to go fully decentralized. And I guess we can talk about that later, because a lot of the projects that have decentralized funding, like Monero or Bitcoin or whatnot, may not be as decentralized as you think there is, because, you know, there are people with vested interests. Why would I throw money at something unless I have a vested interest? And in a way, the good thing about the block reward, despite it being centralized, is you know that the goals are aligned with the coin. You know, I mean, I have no other, like, you know, if my reward is in the coin and is released over a period of time, it is in my interest to make the best coin it is, to make sure that this thing is worth something. So I do like the idea of a block reward purely because there's a clear alignment of incentives.
Yeah, I like that idea too. Actually, that was one thing that really surprised me when I first was talking to your sister Sandra about this, about that, you know, everyone assumes that this project is really heavily funded and has a ton of money behind it because they look at the market cap on CoinGecko or coinmarketcap.com, and they assume that all the founders are absolutely loaded and their team are absolutely minted. But in reality, it's so far from the truth. And and all of the block rewards are not going just to one guy or anything like that. It's completely different from the perception. So I always found that really interesting, that despite the fact that this was a very well, it's funded by Roger Ver. It was nice that you revealed that earlier, but it only had a very small amount of money initially to get going.
Yeah, and that money was all gone.
Yeah, it was gone very quickly.
It was gone, not because we spent it, but because that co-founder took it, and the Gary.
Oh, that's maybe why we can go some dark side of the Hoddle Moon stuff now. Maybe you could reveal some truths on the airwaves. Like, I don't know if you want to publicly talk about that, but if you do, then that's interesting.
Mean, it's not private information. Of course, you know, Gary has a different view of things. He publicly said that Poromin is just a contractor, and he was paying him, and, you know, therefore, like, you know, he can terminate him at any time or stuff like that. So I mean, the basic premise was quite simple. It was just, the idea was that, okay, with the starting funds, Poromin actually didn't even get a lot of it. I think it was like maybe less than 10% of it. And that's not a lot of money to work on it for 2 years, right? And the original, I guess, the agreement that I understood was that once the coin was launched, Poromin would get his half share of 100,000 or something like that, US dollars. But when it launched, I think Gary said that, oh, you know, I want to make sure you're continuing developing on the coin. Why don't I stagger it over the next 12 months and give you a certain amount every month? But what happened was Poromin was like, wait, this isn't what we agreed, but I'm still willing to do it as long as you can show that you still had those funds. I think that's a very fair request, because it's already, you know, moving towards that. But Gary could not show the proof of funds, kind of like Craig Wright. But but yeah, so when he couldn't show the proof of funds, you know, Poromin is like, what the heck? What do you do with all this money? That's kind of how the whole thing broke down. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for revealing that. That's interesting. Didn't know that backstory. One of the things that I really am curious about, and how you feel about this personally, because basically you are outed as a person that is involved in the privacy space, a bit of a, you know, conundrum, potentially with the new legislation coming out, or let's say the Financial Action Task Force, they being more proactive in how they deal with privacy coins. And a lot of privacy coins have been taken off the larger exchanges. But I noticed that, you know, Zcoin is still on some of the biggest ones like Binance, like Bitcoin.com. How did you manage to initially get onto Binance? And how did you manage to get on and stay there, first of all? And are you concerned about you and your own, well, I wouldn't say you're internet famous, but you're famous within the crypto community. I think people would be able to discover who you are easily. Are you a bit concerned about that with the uncertainty about legislation and regulations?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to correct this earlier, but Sandra has no relation to me. She's not my sister, she's not my girlfriend or wife. It's just, we just share the same surname. It's a common mistake, but I've got
I bet everyone thinks that, because I honestly thought that you're both young, you're both called Yap. I thought you're both in the Zcoin team. I was like, okay,
yeah,
you guys must be related.
They were saying, but you're not. You got your girlfriend or sister in, and like, you know, this is like a whole crony drama. No, she has no relation to me whatsoever.
Oh, it was funny. Okay.
It was so funny because we also had a PR team before, and they were called Yap Global, and they were like, what is this? You bring your whole family into it? And it was, again, a coincidence. I had no relation to them whatsoever. It was just
But oh, that's cool. I think we'll have to promote that a little bit more, so correct the misinformation.
But back to the initial question, like how do we get in Binance? It was actually through a community vote. So I think it was one of the first community votes, and so basically we got in for free. So that was a really good way. I think we were offered, like, you know, a listing fee, which wasn't a lot then, but, you know, being kind of like almost a bootstrap company, we couldn't afford anything like that amount. And we decided to use what a little money we had then to kind of incentivize our community to vote. So we're like, okay, we have like 2 Bitcoin or 3 Bitcoin. Let's use it as an incentive to help people to vote for us. And that actually worked really well. And it was a big risk that we were taking, because even if we incentivized the community vote and was spending this money, there was no guarantee that we would have won the competition. But thankfully, we did. And we, you know, got listed on Binance, and we have a good relationship with them. So that's kind of how we got on. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Nice. That's really interesting. And then I'm really concerned about you in terms of how you feel exposed or not. Do you feel like having this platform, obviously you're coming out and you're continuously speaking different platforms, like on this podcast and others. So are you at all concerned about future potential, you know, legislation? Have you ever had any like visits from the law or any letters or cease and desist type of things? But you, with your lawyer background and your background in privacy and VPN, I think that you know how to handle this in the legal sense. But have you had any of these types of concerns? Or
I've been like personally targeted. I had some blackmail event attempts on me, and it was kind of like, you know, getting a bit uncomfortable, because, you know, they were starting to talk things about my wife and, like, you know, where I was. So that's kind of creepy. And even like Google, both Parmin and I got notices from Google to say that we were a target of state level attacks or something like that. And they were recommending that we move towards their Google Advanced Protection Program. So that was interesting. We have no idea who was trying to do that. And of course, Google wouldn't release those details. But the fact that, you know, we were prompted to do that, and, like, you know, our emails, you know, are frequently targeted as attacks and stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah, we definitely feel the risk, right? And like right now, even my phone, I stopped using Google on it, and totally like used like a custom OS called Graphene OS that strips all the Google stuff and hardens the memory, which is quite inconvenient. A lot of stuff, like, I want to watch my YouTube and stuff, but it's, you kind of realize, oh my god, even my banking application like pushes stuff through the Google servers. I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about that. But yeah, it's definitely a concern. But at the same time, we can't be, I mean, there are two ways to go about it, right? One is just like to go through the Satoshi route and be private and stuff like that. But even then, I think it is not easy. Like, you know, those state level actors, if they want to get you, no matter what, they're going to find out your identity. And I do believe, you know, for the trust of a project, I mean, take a look at Monero, you know, Fluffy's still fine, you know, even though he's no longer the lead maintainer. But I don't think there's anything wrong about having a public face to it. And if you take a look at regulations, currently the way the regulations have been done is that people who create privacy technology aren't doing anything illegal. And I think that's a very important distinction to have. So even the only, I guess, worrying trend was when that guy was building a mixing service for Bitcoin. I think he was... I can't remember the exact whether he was convicted or something like that. That's a worrying trend. But generally, the law right now is not about you know, cracking down on people who create this technology. It's about how regulating the use of this privacy technology. Now, another thing is that you brought up about the recent regulations about the delistings. And this is something that I really, really want to make clear. The FATF Trevor rule, which is the Financial Action Task Force, does not ban privacy coins. Privacy coins has nothing to do with the Trevor rule itself. Because the Trevor rule basically just says, if you are an exchange or a custodial wallet provider, that means that you hold customer funds on behalf of the customer, you need to comply with the Trevor rule. And all the Trevor rule says is that when I am transacting from one, they call it a VASP, a VASP, that means either you're an exchange or financial institution or custodial wallet. When you're transferring money between VASP, you need to attach information about where the source of funds, who these funds came from. Now, centralized exchanges already know who you are. A lot of these custodial wallets also require you to give your KYC details. So whether you use a privacy coin or not, it's irrelevant because they know who you are. They can submit that information together with it. And the rules explicitly say you don't have to attach this information to the transaction itself. That means it can be done through any other platform like email or some other like network of exchanges and custodial wallets as a network to share this. So there is nothing wrong with privacy coins there. I mean, the Trevor rule also applies to cash, and cash is anonymous. So the kind of the only reason why it seems to be targeted as privacy coins because some like Korea and some places say that we interpret the Trevor rule to ban privacy coin, and there's nothing to do with that. So that's kind of like, you know, that has to be really clear. There's not a fight against privacy coins. It's all about requiring the same rules that apply to fiat to apply now to cryptocurrencies. So that alone in itself, like just this rule alone, is not wrong. I'm not against that. So yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, yeah, that's good. Thanks for clearing that up. That's definitely interesting. I'm glad that you did clear that up. I think in South Korea, some of the exchanges did remove the privacy coins that were on there. So there's no more Monero. There's no more Dash, which is a shame. What do you think about some of the other coins that are not so popular that are privacy coins? Maybe you don't know all of them because there are so many like forks and things like that. But are there any unusual ones that you think are interesting? One of the coins that I initially liked was called Spectre Coin, XSpec. That is like number 505 on CoinGecko right now, and it's not on any big exchanges. It had Tor obfuscation built in, which was quite interesting, and it had staking. So that was something that I was really interested in 3 years ago, 2017. But now it's fallen off the map completely. They had a team that was basically parody transvestites from Germany, which was quite interesting. But now the team have actually revealed themselves to be like cryptography experts from London. Are there any other privacy coins that you're interested in? And then the next question after that would be about how you can actually use Zcoin in the day-to-day life, and we can talk about prompt pay. So like any coins that you like in the privacy world, and then how do you use Zcoin in the real world now?
I mean, actually, honestly, I like all the current big ones. Like, I like Zcash, even though, you know, their main competitors, Monero, Green, and even Beam, you know, I do think that they're all pushing privacy in their own way. One of the things that I kind of want to use this opportunity to shout out is that just because you have Tor means nothing, because you can do that with Bitcoin already, right? People need to distinguish between network layer privacy, which is basically trying to hide your IP address being tied to a transaction, as opposed to blockchain on-chain privacy, which is about trying to break the links between each other. So, like, for example, this coin, I mean, everyone has heard of it, called Verge, right? It has nothing for on-chain privacy. It does nothing. It's just like, I turn on Tor. Well, big news, you can turn on Tor in Bitcoin as well. The support is completely built in. So there's no added benefit there, you know? And it's just, that's why I don't know about Spectre. I wouldn't say anything about Spectre because I just don't know. But I hate coins that just have like Tor and ITP integration and claim they are a privacy coin. That's like dishonest, and it's like a disservice to the industry. I mean, that's almost
fraud. I don't know. Why don't you tell us how you really feel about that? I mean,
well, I'm telling you how I feel about it.
I'm joking.
and you know, the fact that people say they can have the best privacy when they have no privacy really pisses me off, because yeah, it's just fraud.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you definitely don't want to say something's private when it isn't, especially because, you know, in some countries that privacy is really important.
Yeah.
So Josh mentioned
PromptPay.
You know, using Zcoin in real life and PromptPay, it sounds like it's popular in Thailand. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can expand on that. And what do you think it takes to get Zcoin to increase adoption for Zcoin, or really all these cryptocurrencies? What is it going to take for people to start using it more often? And is this PromptPay thing mostly used in Thailand, or would it be possible to go into other countries?
Right. So just for the introduction, what PromptPay is. PromptPay is a national Thailand QR code system, which ties directly into bank accounts. And I think there's about half the population is on it. So I think it's like 30-40 million people with that use PromptPay. And there are like maybe 3-4 million merchants that are constantly growing because it's just so widely used. Now, of course, it was, you know, designed as, you know, part of the regular fiat system. But because Poromin owns one of the two regulated exchange in Thailand, he can process those conversions. So, I mean, a lot of people say that, well, you know, you're a privacy coin and you have this PromptPay system and you're dealing with fiat, you still have KYC. Isn't that against it? I think we have to be realistic. We can't be just pure purists and then we don't get anywhere. The idea to me, or rather to us, is that if we can get adoption at a nationwide level with millions of people being able to use it at one go, it is okay for the meantime to sacrifice privacy there, because once people start believing, okay, I can spend Zcoin in real life, it becomes like money. They stop thinking about it as just an investment. They start thinking about, this is something that I can actually use widely. And once I have that information, then I can say, oh, maybe I just want to keep some of my Zcoin, or maybe I want to accept Zcoin directly. I think that's a more natural progression, rather than expecting like some street hawker and explaining to them the benefits of money sovereignty and uncensorable money. Like, no, fuck it, you know, I just want to sell my noodles, you know, buzz off, you know. I mean, that's reality, right?
Normies aren't going to want a long explanation of the history of money and why cryptocurrency is important. They're just going to want to buy their beer or, you know, buy, like you said, buy their noodles.
And if you take a look at like the way like Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash or Dash, all this very like merchant focused stuff, of course they had some successes, but they had to spend a lot of money to get there. And even then, it's still a question mark whether it's sustainable, because what usually happens if you just get people to accept it, right now, you know, there aren't that many users, right? So I have to train my staff to accept this in a different method, and then I maybe get one customer a month or less. And we even tried this in New York, right? And all these places that said they accept Bitcoin, they went there and like, I don't know, right? There will be only like, you know, a few like cafes that, yeah, crypto enthusiasts go to that will continue to accept the crypto. But far and wide, these people get interested for a while, they maybe accept it for 2 months, and then, oh, no one's coming, and then they don't train their staff, and then the merchant falls off. So I feel that that's a unrealistic and unsustainable way to build merchant adoption. So even if we have to kind of sacrifice privacy in the meantime, if we can get nationwide adoption for that, let me, so the way that our QR code system is that when you pay, you know, it gets automatically converted to Thai baht, and then the merchant gets Thai baht. He doesn't even need to know that this was processed through Zcoin, and that would be a good way to do it. Currently, it works with about 50 to 60% of the QR code systems. We are trying to find ways to work with a bank and also maybe like a e-wallet provider that would allow us a direct tap in. These things take time, and currently the system is about a bit unwieldy. Box Mining actually did a video sort of illustrating this. So although he got to spend Zcoin and buying a Dean and DeLuca coffee, there were a lot of instances where it didn't work, and it kind of shows the reality of where we are right now. But
okay, you said it was automatically converted to fiat. Do the merchants have an option to keep it as Zcoin?
No, because
currently
the QR code system is just designed to go directly into the bank account. So the idea is that, well, we can't be targeting the merchants. We should be targeting people that just want to hold Zcoin and use it and spend it. So that's the current kind of like trade-off that we have to have. Now, the good thing about this QR code system, although it's in Thailand, there are now talks about like merging the different national QR code systems. So, for example, in Singapore, they have something called PayNow, and they are entering into an intergovernment relationship so that PayNow can accept PromptPay, PromptPay can accept PayNow. So once all these national kind of systems come together, then you have regulated exchange to do conversions in each place, it really opens the floodgates as to making cryptocurrency spendable in real life. It still doesn't solve the privacy issue, but I think adoption is of a paramount importance. And once people believe that this thing is cash, people can then transact it in its native form.
Nice. All right, cool. Well, I've got a few more questions here. Maybe we can do them rapid fire. Maybe Josh has a few more too. So if I get a couple of quick answers here. I also noticed, maybe it's not one of the main focuses, but I read something about there's a possibility to issue tokens on the chain, mm-hmm. and also that Zcoin was used by the Thai Democratic Party to vote in their election. So if I just get a quick response on that.
Yeah. So wait, what was the first question again?
The one was about using Zcoin to vote in the elections. Right. The other one was that I don't know if you're currently doing it or in the future you're going to be able to issue tokens on the Zcoin chain.
So you can already issue tokens on the Zcoin chain. The Sigma functionality, that means our privacy features, will be launched in the next 1 or 2 months or so. It's actually kind of ready. We're just testing it right now. So what that means is that anyone can launch a token and actually use Zcoin's privacy features. So I think that's really cool. It really opens the doors to something like a USDT
that's gonna be awesome.
That is private. We are also thinking of building bridges between like chains. For example, if I can lock, let's say, USDT on Ethereum with a smart contract and use it to generate a Z token, then you do all your privacy features, and then if you want it back in Ethereum, you can convert that out. We're trying to figure out the best way to do that in a semi-trustless manner. So that's also in development, but you can already create tokens on Zcoin's chain. As for the Thai Democrat Party elections, that's actually really interesting. It's actually the world's first political election carried out on a blockchain, and it was 127,000 voters nationwide. And it wasn't just a test. You know, the Democrat Party leader was actually elected based on the results that were done on the blockchain. And why it was really important was because it was a very unique scenario where none of the candidates trusted each other. They didn't even trust the election commission. And they wanted a kind of like a database where there was no administrator, you know, it's kind of neutral. And Zcoin just fit in, right? Because you can have like an append-only database, but an append-only database still has an administrator. While with a blockchain, it's neutral and it was actually solving you know, the issue right there. So I think that's really interesting. Paramin did indicate to me that there has been some interest in doing this on a larger scale. And we'll see about that. We're really interested to see this system be used again or even refined even further.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, whether it's really with
great use case.
Yeah. Whether it's with Zcoin or any blockchain, I would love to see more elections on the blockchain, because then the votes are going to count and you can't change the vote totals and everything's able to be seen by everybody.
No.
And that's a really a good thing, a good application of blockchain, where voting should be another trustless thing.
True, but I would say that I would caution that, you know, there are a lot of people that are just promoting like blockchain voting. It only solves one component, which is, I guess, the storage of the votes, and perhaps there are other ways to do that. But because, you know, electronic voting has, you know, from the software to the hardware to everything's like, you know, how do I know when I'm pressing this button is actually recording the right thing on the blockchain? There are ways to do that. There are ways to improve that. But one of the cool things that if people want to use it, it wasn't used in the Thai Democrat Party elections, but our technology about allowing people to disappear coins and redeem them can be also used for voting, because I can like take my vote, make it disappear, and then cast it to the preferred candidate. So that would actually allow, you know, anonymous but verifiable voting. So that's also another interesting use case that can be only done on our blockchain. Yeah.
Nice. And can you tell a little bit more about the upcoming roadmap? It sounds like you had some privacy improvements or some things you're still developing. Could you touch on that a little bit?
Sure. So right now, I mean, we're about to release our new roadmap for 2020 and beyond. And I think the major focus for this year is something called Lelantis, which is our own creation. And basically, Lelantis allows you, we still use the burn and redeem method, but with the current technology, you have to burn and redeem in fixed amounts. That means if I burn 10, I have to redeem 10. And the problem with that is that, you know, it reveals certain information, because you can take a look at the patterns of the burns and the amounts. While what Lelantis allows you to do is to burn any arbitrary amount, and you can redeem a fraction or, like, you know, any arbitrary amount from it. So when I burn 10.76, I can redeem 0.02 from it, and I protect my privacy. It's a lot more efficient. We expect this to maybe go live maybe at the end of Q2, so that's quite close. And we have a lot of other stuff, like, you know, better masternode reliability and like infrastructure upgrades, a mobile, you know, privacy on by default wallet. We, you know, we're further expanding, as I mentioned, like, you know, the cross-chain ability. And we're also starting to look into, we already use something called Dandelion Plus to protect, you know, IP addresses from being without having the use of Tor. But we are also looking at stuff like mixed nets to you know, protect against like nation state adversaries. So yeah, that's kind of like the roadmap in a nutshell. But we do have a lot of interesting ideas.
Cool.
We actually have some upcoming improvements to Lelantis itself, which we will announce.
So if people wanted to get involved and help, you know, develop your code base, what mm-hmm. type of proficiencies are you looking for people that want to get involved in terms of development?
Well, I mean, of course, you know, we're based off a Bitcoin core, so I guess C++, you know, would be the main language that you'll be dealing with. But if you also want to help with our new graphic rich client wallet, if you have like Vue.js knowledge or Electron framework knowledge, that would help. And if you are like an independent cryptography researcher, you want to poke holes in our stuff, definitely would be recommend that. We even have like a very good bounty system for that. So yeah, those are great ways. And even if you don't have any coding experience, you want to, you know, hold your own local community meetup and stuff like that, go to our ZCS, the ZCS at zcoin.io, the Zcoin crowdfunding system, where you can apply for funds from the community and us to run your own little meetups. Yeah.
That's cool. I think that Cade might be hosting a Zcoin meetup soon in the on the East Coast of the United States. That'd be cool.
Hope so. Let us know.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And I'll go for one in Seoul. I think that's really interesting. All right. Well, I've got to say, it's been a really interesting interview today, Ruben. I mean, you covered so many things. We could do another podcast, I'm sure, full of even more content. You can go even deeper. But it's been over an hour now, and we'd like to keep our shows around that time, just for the audience. We don't want to, we're not quite Joe Rogan podcast level yet, but maybe one day we will. So any closing thoughts that you want to share with the audience? Cade, before we go, and then Ruben, you can have the last word.
Yeah, well, it was great talking to you today about cryptocurrency and privacy in crypto transactions. I also saw that they used Zcoin was being used to get through some sanctions in Iran, but we can maybe talk about that some other time. But yeah, if you have any closing thoughts or comments, and I'll let you have the last word today.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think just check out our website at zcoin.io, join our Telegram or Discord communities, which are bridged to each other. So, you know, if you're in one, the, you will also end up another. And, you know, you, I would really recommend, like, you know, going through the material, YouTube channel. And I think we have one of the most welcoming communities, and we would love to, you know, spread the word of privacy and Zcoin.
Yeah, man. I remember actually that I went to one of your meetups in Malaysia, and it was, they were really welcoming. We had a good conversation. It was at a really nice bar in Kuala Lumpur.
Oh,
some good
awesome
ales were had. So that was cool. All right, man. I'd love to have you on the show again in the future, and we can talk about the developments with the Lalantas that are coming up in the future. But for now, Cade, I want you to sign off with your famous, we'll see you on the dark side of the HODL moon. Go ahead.
All right. Yes, that was a great interview with Ruben today. And you can use Monero, Grin, Beam, or Zcoin to send a super cryptographic, super secure Tor enabled transaction from Earth to us on the dark side of the HODL moon.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the HODL Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlmoon.com. HODL